have 60 seconds to comply.
I think you'd better do what he says, Mr. Kenny.
You have 60 seconds to comply. This is Minute 54. Part man.
Part machine.
All pod.
This minute begins with Robo Real Estate Agent still giving the sales pitch and ends with the image of a satanic child. Very misleading description there.
Yeah, my opening was because this is recorded the week before Halloween, so it's a spooky couch time!
Isn't that funny? We are recording it and there is a Halloween scene in these minutes and Halloween is fast approaching.
Yeah, unfortunately, this will be like coming out like the day after Halloween.
Bums.
I know, if we hadn't taken some time off, we would have popped out first, but yeah. It's obviously the ghouls and the specters that have been interfering with the podcast, so...
Yes, clearly.
So I did a little bit of investigative journalism, and as I was editing the last minute, I was like, yeah, I feel bad because I've been so busy, and I've not really pulled my thumb out regarding, you know, background checking some information. So I decided to look for the interior location.
Oh, yeah.
And I found it.
You did?
Yeah.
Because I wanted to know.
So I'm going to post you the link. I'm not going to tell the address. It is available online. If you just Google Robocop Interiors, you can find this. It is in Dallas, Texas. I don't want to dox anyone on a public podcast that no one listens to. But there is some photos. And they're as recent as 2017. Well, that's happening. I will say, what's really interesting is that... it's relatively untouched.
So is that all still like that?
Pretty much.
Wow.
It looks like the only the kitchens had a slight renovation. I think they've just redone the tabletops, but they've got, like, repainted it.
I'm so glad because it is just...
yeah.
It's such a bold statement that, yeah, okay, it is dated, but not in a bad way. I think that's got a lot of charm to it.
Yeah, and if you go through the Google Maps view in that page, I'm not sure if you can see it on the webpage. I actually went to the Google Maps, so see if it's still current. It looks almost, well, the exterior looks exactly the same. Although, funny, considering what we said last time, there was actually a car parked out front of the building, so with the trailer, so it's blocking the view. It looks like, if you look from the top, it looks like it's a duplex, so it's basically like an arc. So this is obviously the one side, and if you look at the kitchen, it curves back around, and that's where the that must be where the master bedroom is.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, or at least something similar.
They've added a ceiling fan, I think. What a huge change to the... yeah.
We have to take that off now.
Yeah, it's inaccurate.
It could have been there the entire time, actually looking at the ground level once. That's a pretty high angle.
True.
But yeah, it's nice to see that, you know, there's a little bit of renovation, which happens, you know. It's just a paint job, and maybe a countertop. Maybe the production team really did burn shit on the table and had to fix it. I doubt it. But yeah, it's good to see that the fireplace is still there, you know, the black tiles and everything, you know, it looks still lived in. I kind of think I prefer the Robocop decor.
Whoever's living in it right now, I mean, they've got these very brightly coloured decorations, they've got some leopard print chairs, zebra, carpet rug, if you will. Yeah, they've definitely...
zebra chairs as well as the carpet. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. The red and the black works. Don't get me wrong. But yeah. It
looks so 80s. I think they obviously just went, look, this place looks like it came out of Miami Vice. Let's just fucking embrace it.
Some of that furniture looks a bit modern, but yeah. Yeah. We got a house that's featured in one of the best movies of the 80s.
Yes.
Let's just keep it like that.
I'm so proud.
Yeah, as soon as I was like, I've got to pull my finger out and actually look at this. I thought this was going to be harder than it was. And of course, you know, it's the internet. Of course somebody's already found this.
I just didn't do a good enough job because I kept looking. I wanted to know, but I don't know. I just could not find it.
I just managed to find it. I just did a Google Robocop shooting locations interior, and it was the almost second one down after the people asked section.
Yeah, Google.
That could just be my algorithm helping me out.
Just using DuckDuckGo. That's my problem, not using Google.
Ah.
Yeah, maybe.
You're probably doing the smarter move that way.
Yeah, they can't track me. No one can track me. So these minutes are some of the more significant ones in, well, a film that is already quite significant. I don't think it wastes time with too many extraneous things. But yeah, I think a lot about, well, you know, Maggie May had her interpretation of this transgender reading of, but I do think there's something about gender here and just softness and femininity and it's in stark contrast to RoboCop's enforced toxic masculinity. Mm. And
yeah,
I can't help but have a gendered reading on that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, what's interesting is that this is a repeated flashback. It's essentially repetition of the flashback when he dies.
Yes, which we'll...
next minute we'll definitely go back into that.
Yes, we can only hint at it just expanded. Now. Yes.
Yes. Although I did reach out to Maggie May Fish. I went through official channels, but didn't get a response because... Yeah,
shame.
No, it was a shot in the dark. Worth it.
YouTubers think they're too good for us podcasts. It's always the way. I've tried to get some YouTube. I mean, I'm a YouTuber. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. I've got that big YouTube money. Like, why am I doing...
I just reckon the person that's handling her, like, your corporate email account or her agents just went, shitty RoboCop podcaster.
Bunch of neckbeard losers.
No, let's just... Hey, that's me!
We are neckbeard losers, yeah. I still, I detransitioned, but I still grow facial hair on my neck and chin, so I am still a neckbeard. I'm proud of it.
I did have a trim. I am a kempt neckbeard.
But, yes, it's a very serious scene. It's a very sad, serious scene.
It's a very serious scene.
Very sad. I also really love the music in this scene. Dreamy, melancholic. And it's actually very memorable. I do associate it with RoboCop. Mm. It does stand out. And it is fascinating to me to try to break down, well, why do I feel like this is not only softer but more feminine in this scene? And then there's also the association with domestic and all of that.
Mm. But it's that great dreamlike quality to the music. It gives it the right ambience, and it's also kind of melancholy. It's sad, and as we pretty much brought up in previous minutes, we've got a character who isn't speaking, who can barely emote.
Yeah.
I mean, props to Peter Weller in this. Like, he's acting the shit out of this costume, but there's only so much you can do. And, like, the cinematography, the music, like, it's doing all the heavy lifting in these few minutes. And, flat out, this movie, it might work without this scene. That's benefit of the doubt. Yes, to say it might work it, but this is one of those moments where it takes an already really good film. A great film, but and it just puts it one step above.
Yeah,
like it just elevates the entire thing.
Yeah, I was thinking about this recently because I watch a lot of 80s shows, and the ones I come back to, I feel, I was asking myself, well, why is it that I really get attached to these certain ones? And it's almost this craving to spend time with certain people. Like, I really want some Ernest Borgnine tonight. I'm going to watch some Airwolf because it's just, he's so sweet and lovely. But it's not just that, even though I think Ernie Borgnine on his own can carry a show by himself, which towards the end there on Airwolf,
yeah,
he had to because Jan Michael Vincent certainly wasn't. It's like the interaction between all those characters, it becomes a family. Knight Rider, MacGyver, all of them. Well, MacGyver, actually, I'm getting through much more slowly because the family dynamic, recurring characters and all that doesn't factor in for a while. And then tying it all back in, it all comes back to humanity. And I probably mentioned this before that, you can have the most amazing science fiction scenario, action, all of that, special effects. Mm. But it really always will come down to am I connecting with this on an emotional level? Is there some way I can access this psychologically?
Exactly.
And without this scene, you've got very little. You've basically got Lewis at the end watching Murphy take his helmet off. And
yes.
That's it.
Well, I think that's very deliberate in this case. You know, the idea is that RoboCop isn't connecting with anyone. As you know, he's supposed to be detached. He's supposed to be this instrument of both the police force and OCP. His humanity's been stripped away, and it's only when he's connecting with Lewis he starts to gain that back. Mm. And even to a certain degree with Emil, you know, it's the pieces that fall into place to bring that out of him. And this is why, for example, like, we need characters, like point of view characters, or if our main characters can't be that, we need point of view characters, you know, the R2-D2 and the C-3PO of the world, the people that that we can connect to introduce to the wider picture.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, I do kind of feel for RoboCop, you know, it's
Yeah, because we get a sense of what he lost. Yeah, because
remake, if we didn't have the Murphy scenes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In the remake, we get so much time with that family, but there's no sense of having lost them or what's changed. We're not connecting. Whereas, with just these 2 or 3 minutes, it's music, the performance, just what they decide to show us so selectively, it draws us in. It does feel like a memory I want to step into. I want to be a part of this family in a way I don't want to with the remake family.
Well, even like the memories in this particular scene are really just bringing home, like, this isn't RoboCop like trying to remember. It's like he's just forced to remember. Like it's just his subconscious finally bubbling. Yeah, he has no control over this. It's not RoboCop searching for a memory. It's just RoboCop getting them.
Mm.
I still write in the notes that this is like, you know, even in the show credits and stuff, I always call this RoboCop. When he finally lifts off the helmet, I will start calling him Murphy.
Yeah.
Like, because that's, to me, is the moment in the movie where he stops being RoboCop and starts being Murphy again. Or at least a facsimile of Murphy, if you will.
It's fascinating the way that... Yeah, I always call the remake RoboCop Murphy. I never feel like he's lost anything. And, you know, that could have been interesting.
No.
Playing with that balance there of, you know, keeping the humanity, how much do we lose?
You could say that about the entire film.
The whole movie presented some really interesting ideas, but it was almost like, you know, you're driving down a highway and there's all these great attractions. Like, oh, let's have a look at... No, keep driving. Oh, well, what about... No. We should check this out. No, keep driving. Okay. I mean, we'll get from point A to B.
We've got to take the longest way to the end.
Point A to Z, maybe I should say.
Yeah, it's amazing how a movie that's half an hour longer doesn't have even a tenth of the amount of good storytelling as this
one. Yeah, which you can say about some Stephen King books. I haven't actually gotten to the bad ones yet. I haven't got to his cocaine phase, but yeah, it's like you can write 200 pages, 300 pages, but doesn't mean it's going to be good.
I've always found King's work to be very hit and miss, but it's been a while since I've tried to read any of his work.
Yeah, not to go on a tangent, but yeah, so I've done Carrie, was it The Shining second? No, it was The Shining, then The Stand, Dead Zone, I've just started Firestarter. They're all great. They're all really good. So he's on a roll. I'll let you know, and you listeners as well, when does it start getting bad? When does he start hitting the sauce? And when does he start... Well, he wrote The Shining because of his alcoholism, so maybe he's already hitting the sauce, but I don't think he's done the coke yet.
Well, I know that the dark half was him trying to resolve his whole thing with his alter ego, the... I was going to say Richard Branson, but it's not. It's Bachman.
Richard Bachman. I haven't read any Bachman yet because I've decided all the Stephen King novels, then Bachman, then the short stories.
I kind of hate the sad. I prefer the Bachman stuff.
It's much more rock and roll. I mean, Stephen King's pretty rock and roll anyway, but it's very edgy. I love it. But getting back on track.
I got to tie this back, but yeah, it's interesting that King did this whole thing with the Dark Half, talk about his like the his how he felt in this period where he was doing all this different stuff and how it became like an alternate personality. It's interesting that in this movie, Murphy doesn't necessarily change. Mm. His circumstances changes, but that's kind of what they wanted though from Murphy. They wanted a good person in the suit. To a certain degree, they wanted a good cop. That's why they transferred Murphy to essentially die.
Yes, they still want those instincts. It's fascinating what they are trying to pull out and what they allow to stay in. You know, where do you draw that line?
Mm.
If you allow too much humanity through, then, you know, does that mean his memories and personality start to come through as well?
Well, I think that's kind of the idea of the corporate critique, is that when Murphy starts to gain his humanity, he starts to gain his independence, and not necessarily specifically Morton had an issue with it, because he kind of doesn't find out, but Dick Jones certainly has an issue with it, and he also, it's almost that thing of like, RoboCop's individuality threatens his existence. And, you know, when RoboCop finally confronts Dick, that's when, you know, he pulls the gambit to say, yeah, I thought about this beforehand. But we'll get to that very soon.
Oh, not to go on a total tangent, but last week I watched Halloween 3, because, you know, it is the spooky season. So I watched Halloween 3.
I still haven't seen that yet.
Season of the Witch, so the good. One. I think it's on Stan. Anyway, so the old man runs the toy company, he makes masks, or whatever. Anyway, and he's basically playing the same character. It's so good. If you already know he's the old man from RoboCop, definitely improves the experience.
Well, it's funny because the whole idea was they didn't even particularly want to make Halloween 2 a Michael Myers movie. They just wanted to do anthologies. And yes.
So, which they should have done.
Yeah, yeah. And now we're stuck in a never-ending cycle of...
Yeah, I don't freaking like Halloween. It is so boring. You know, like, at least Freddy, he's got his catchphrases, he's quippy, and then Jason, this big dumb idiot who does all this stupid shit, like the violence in that is hilarious, so I get it, but that's why I got through like six of them.
Yeah, Halloween is not supposed to be a slasher flick though, it's psychological horror, it's not supposed to be slasher, but they've turned Michael Myers into a slasher villain because that made money.
Yep.
Well, okay, the first one made enough money, that's it. Like, it was of the era where if you had to be horror, you had to be slasher. That's like, you know, for like, I don't know, last pretty much post-Saw, you know, all horror had to be torture porn.
Yep.
So it became a victim of just this one era. But I like the original Halloween. I kind of like... I'm gonna be very contrarian to you. I think I like Halloween better than I like the original Nightmare and Friday the 13th. I like the slow burn. I like the psychological anger, and I also like the fact that it's a pretty horrific film, and it actually has a very minimal amount of blood.
Yeah,
like it really is more about the pacing and the atmosphere, and Carpenter's a genius when it comes to that kind of shit.
I think we can all agree. The John Carpenter's Halloween theme fucking slaps. Like, you just, like, headbanging, fuck yeah, devil horns, da-na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah, that's it. It's a classic for a reason. And I do like, you know, Nightmare, and I love the Nightmare series, even the cheesy, shitty ones. I haven't seen, I think 5's probably the only one I've ever seen once, and that's probably my least favourite. Mm. I even like New Nightmare, because at least New Nightmare tried to do something with it. I've not watched the reboot because...
That's the meta one, right?
Yeah. Yes. That was basically Scream before Scream.
Fuck yes, that is so underrated. I was watching Scream
going, I've seen this!
I still haven't seen Scream, I don't think, because I've just seen it like parodied, I've seen it referenced, because I don't think I actually have seen it.
Hang on. Whoa, hang on. I've seen a movie you haven't? Oh my god, I think that's the first of this podcast.
I don't know. I'm not sure. How do I confirm? I guess I have to just watch it again. Or for the first time.
You have to watch Scream, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just watch the first one. The rest of them aren't worth a damn, yeah. To be perfectly honest.
Don't do it, girl. Fine. It ain't worth it. Just... That's not going to timestamp this at all.
Scream is good meta-commentary on the genre while subverting it and adding something to it. And that's how you do meta-commentary.
We should probably not talk about horror movies. We're... Sadly, it is the spooky season.
It's Halloween!
We're getting into it, but no, season. It's got to be Wobocop. Here we are.
Speaking of disembodied voices...
Mm-hmm.
How's that for a spank segue? Speaking of disembodied voices,
it'll do.
We do have the salesman in the head in a box. Another spooky thing. The actor's name is Martin Goslins. He's done a lot of TV, so yeah, clearly not done too much. Although he was in the Beauty and the Beast TV series with Ron Perlman.
And, oh, hell yeah.
What's his face? Yeah.
Is it Linda Hamilton?
Yes. My brain was thinking Sarah Connor.
Yeah, that's my brain couldn't detach.
Kind of been in a bit of an irony kick. There is a little bit of extra dialogue. And so, funnily enough, even though this is the spooky episode.
We've just decided now, yeah.
The Halloween scene is not in the original script. So, the actual, the Polaroid photo, I was going to bring this up next minute, but screw it. It's actually not in the original script or in the book. There is a different scene, which I'll come to. In the script, we've got the salesman adding additional dialogue. He does say something when the Robocop approaches the kitchen, but yeah, that thing's almost the exact same. But he goes, short on cash? With master budget financing, your earning power is your equity. We manage your income so you can manage your life. In the book, Robocop goes, fuck you.
Yeah. Doesn't seem very Robocop-like.
I know! It's like...
He shouldn't care one way or the other. It's just background noise.
I'm sorry, I apologize. He just says, fuck off.
Yeah, still, like, that annoyance, that's an emotion.
Yes. But, yeah, it's... That's it. It's really interesting that is... So this is one of those things that obviously got added probably by Paul or somewhere along the way. And yeah, I can't imagine this scene working without just that extra bit of thing of this family unit. Like, yeah, I don't get it. Like, I don't get how you couldn't have just more of these characters working together and seeing them as a family unit. It boggles me that someone tried to get rid of this. Yeah. Like, literally, this entire scene. Orion did not want it.
That's crazy. It
bothers me.
Why would they not want it?
I think it's because they're going, oh, it's an action film. You don't want this slow-paced thing. You don't want this emotional scene. We just want, just...
Strip all the humanity out of it.
Yeah, just cut to the next scene where Leon kicks Robocop in the metal dick.
It's very meta.
Yeah.
It's very meta. Like, we want to strip all the humanity out of this product.
Yes. And, 20-odd years later, they did.
Yes, finally they got one on.
So, yeah. Interestingly enough, because this is the last time we'll see him in the movie, Jimmy, or James, because he's not named in this movie,
Jimmy
is
James.
Played by an actor... Jimmy James. That feels like such a redneck name.
Jimmy James, get your ass back in the trailer right now.
Well, that's the... It's almost like
your
a cheese Mario, grits, Mario scenario.
Your cheese grits are getting cold.
Come and get your grits.
I don't know why I derive so much joy out of that accent.
Oh, God. Anyway, so the actor who plays Jimmy is Jason Levine, who this is the only story credit, but as this is the only time we'll actually get to talk about him.
I love him in Maroon 5, Mercury 7, whatever band he's in.
Oh, God. That's Adam Levine, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It would be funny if he just changed the name and just became this just, like, absolutely main horn dog of a musician.
Do we know what Adam Levine was up to between the years of 1985 and 87? No, we don't.
I'm not sure I particularly want to find out. The secret shame, he was in a Robocop movie. But at least it was a good one.
Yeah, at least there is that. So the most prominent thing in this minute, I think, we haven't even talked about it yet, is the shattered world-class husband mug, which is just there on the counter.
Yes.
I did not notice that that it was just sitting there. I've seen this so many times that it's quite obvious when you see it.
Yeah, no, it's a... skipping to the commentary a little bit... It's funny because in the commentary, Paul actually talks about the transitions and how it's like, oh yes, you know, we did these transitions and so we matched the shots and blurred them together with a bit of fuzz to tell the audience. And they're going, I kind of get it, Paul. You know, I can see with my eyes. I love you, but
it's, you know, you kind very of, on the nose.
It's bad commentary etiquette when you're just literally explaining what's on the screen. Directly.
Oh, you mean what Ridley Scott and Arnold Schwarzenegger do every single frickin' time? I mean, at least when Arnie does it, it's kind of charming.
Yeah, but at least Arnold Schwarzenegger's funny.
Yeah. And here, I'm swinging a sword, and it's a big sword, and it was a lot of... Yeah. It's a lot of sword. Yeah, I get it. I'm looking at the sword, man. It's a lot. Yeah.
I gotta get you a copy of the Total Recall commentary. It's so good. Dueling accents.
Oh, yeah. Conan
one. Such indulgent.
The Conan one.
Conan's great.
So good. I wish you could just get that. When you stream a movie, you can choose a commentary track. Why do we not have this? I would pay good money for it. I'm already paying so much money for subscriptions.
Yeah, this is why I always will prefer physical media. I'm sorry. You know, I like my bonus extras, although I don't listen to as much commentary as I used to, but... I like my extras.
Mm.
I like my behind the scenes. I like it when I'm looking into a podcast and I can have to spend an entire 54 episodes on one gimmick where I have to analyze a goddamn commentary.
I remember way back in the day. Yeah, I would listen to commentaries like podcasts. I think there's definitely a demand for it. There's an audience. Why not?
It's irony now. Think about it. Like 20 years on, like, the selling point of DVDs, once they finally got the quality down and made them affordable, is that why buy a you can buy a VHS, and you know the TVs were still kind of shit back then, so you weren't really getting a great boost in quality. But why buy a VHS when you can buy a DVD and you get extra shit for your buck?
Yeah,
that was the selling point. To the point where even like extra features, picture disc was a thing. The lowest bar possible on a DVD. Interactive menus and picture disc.
We see TJ Laser again on the screen.
Yes.
Murphy's son is watching. He's like, can you do that, Dad? And again, I mean, the whole thing is just revolving around the same theme of this is the life he's lost. These are... the things that he will never get back ever again.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what happens to the family. I mean, the sequel sort of hint at it, but yeah, I'd love to know, you know. Maybe that's what a sequel or a reboot could be. It's like, you know, adult Jimmy James. Yeah, where is he now? How does he deal with that?
Where's Jimmy James now?
Mm.
Well, an alternate bit of dialogue in the book and the script. James just says, neat, huh, Dad. Thrilling stuff.
Okay.
But,
oh, neat, huh, Dad? Yeah, like that.
Yeah. I like, can you do that? It just adds a little bit of, you know, again, thematic tying, you know. A cop trying to be a hero to his son, and, you know, hence the spinning gun, which then ties into being noticed by Lewis, and yeah. It's almost like this is done by a master craftsman.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot, you know, especially going through Stephen King's work and just trying to figure out what it is that helps us connect. So obviously King has many adaptations of his work, and that's what I'm finding the most fascinating. Wow, I had this real intense emotional attachment to this character, and I'm watching the movie and I feel absolutely nothing, even though I already have all the background stuff from having read the book. Yeah, it is really about being so selective about what you show and how you show it. And I think RoboCop does it perfectly.
Yeah, adaptations is one of those interesting beasts in that regard, because it's not just about putting word to screen.
Mm.
You've really got to try and convey emotion visually, you know.
I think it's more about nailing that tone, that vibe, the feeling, you know. It's not about doing every single thing verbatim, and I think a lot of adaptations make that mistake. Maybe the RoboCop remake could be said to be, and the sequels as well. I think they try to remake they use the building blocks, but they're not using the actual, you know, underlying mechanics that made it what it was.
Look, I say it's been a long time since I've watched RoboCop 3 for very good reasons,
mm-hmm.
but I think at least for, say, RoboCop 2, Kirshner tried to do something that wasn't just a remake of 1. He tried to fit in the themes like, you know, OCP versus the cops, you know, RoboCop himself being essentially a tool and this, you know, a tool of the corporation. There's themes you can get into there. I don't recall. Again, this is why I'm cynical about remakes, because unless you are... It's one thing to change a story in a remake or a reboot. Fine, add something new.
Yeah.
But when you're so closely trying to just redo something, but then you almost either forget, you ignore, or you just flat out avoid what made your first one so engaging. You just have to go, why are you doing this? Like, yeah, the remake does have some good things that you could have focused on and made it really good. And there's stuff I'm definitely going to bring up in Gaslighting for the next 10 minutes.
Mm.
But if you just fail to do that basic level thing of how do I connect to a character and why do I want to keep watching this character, then your movie is going to fall flat.
A lot of remakes or adaptations are riding on the goodwill, the good reputation of what it was based on without trying to earn any of that on its own merit. And then you just end up with this. It's the Ready Player One effect. Remember this? Remember this? Yes, I do, but what of it?
So my brain went to Free Guy when... Don't want to say it spoils, it actually ended up in the trailer. But when the hulked out version of Guy turns up and he just says, catchphrase! And that's his catchphrase. It's so good because it's like, there's definitely, they're just going, this is what these kind of industries are like. It's all surface level reading and it's none of the emotive reading or it's none of,
I think some related reading, if people want to check it out, most people have, H-Bomber Guy gets a million views, or more. H-Bomber Guy did this really in-depth analysis of this CGI anime show, but it was by Rooster Teeth. I can't remember what it was called.
RWBY.
So, yeah, Ruby.
Yes.
And
I didn't know if it was pronounced Ruby or not.
Yes, Ruby. And it's basically bad Avatar The Last Airbender fan fiction. They're trying to do... Yes. They go, do something like this and that'll be really cool. Like, no, but the show that you base it on, that earned it through, you know, actually building up to that. You can't just jump straight to that and expect it to have the same effect. So, yeah.
Yeah. Narrative flow is a thing. You know, it's the... build rising tension, it's building to a climax. If you start at, you can start in medias res, you can start at a climax, but you still kind of have to step back a bit. If you start at high octane, high tension across the board and ramping up the tension, you're going to get burnout. This is one of the Bay problems as well, is that Bay tends to ramp up the action and then keep up the action, and then keep up the action.
And they're all 3-hour long movies, so...
Yeah.
Michael Bay is actually fine. I went through the entire Transformers saga, but I did it 1 hour at a time. I watched each movie, I watched 1 hour, stop. Tomorrow, I'll watch another hour. So I treated it more like a TV series. Was actually pretty good that way. I could actually remember plot points. And I hate myself for that, because now I can tell you in great depth what fucking Frasier was planning with the Decepticons in the fourth movie.
I forgot he was in that film.
I hate myself. Should we, speaking of shitty things, should we talk about gaslighting Robocop?
I do still have some, hang on, let me just check. Hang on, let me just check, because I think we've already talked about it.
Please let me just do a segue for once.
No. You have... I'm cutting all this out, so I just want to check my notes. Because I did bring up the things I wanted to bring up earlier. Yes. I'm letting you have this one. Good. I'm letting you have this one. Go.
I'm kind of...
Fucking do it.
Oh, yeah, we did it. I'm kind of punchy.
You shot your load.
Yeah, I did it. I feel good. What's the word, punchy? Yeah, I'm just kind of like... I've had a big day. I'm in a silly mood. I don't know. So yeah, gaslighting Robocop.
Alex, how do you feel?
I feel fine, Dr. Norton.
Minute 58 begins with Murphy stepping into his recharge station and ends with the stupidest decision in the entire film.
You're not wrong.
So, Simon, what is that stupid decision?
The stupid decision is, you know what this first movie missed?
Mm.
A press conference.
It needed a press conference. Absolutely. Actually, you know what?
Press conference.
This scene would have been improved with Miguel Ferrer. Anything would have been improved. But yeah, I feel like...
Oh, Jesus! Holy crap! No! Fuck! Repetition. Repetition in movies. Reminders. Setups. Payoffs. Repetition. Mm-hmm. Why wasn't this... Novak, Samuel Jackson.
Yeah, you set this asshole up. Oh my god, you're right. Yeah.
Fuck.
It's right there.
Fuck.
Why would you have some other random reporter?
You set up the media break proxy. You set up this Bill O'Reilly motherfucker. And you don't use it. Almost an hour into this movie, and this character doesn't come back. This is the perfect opportunity.
Have him
comment on this.
That actually...
God, motherfucking damn it!
Not to go onto a tangent...
Bastards!
About Stephen King again, but just to briefly... In the Dead Zone, there's a woman and her child set up early in the story, right?
Yeah.
And then in the third act, very critically, a character... the villain interacts with a mother and child. Very crucial to the plot.
Yeah.
Instead of using the mother and child characters that were already established and we have an emotional investment into,
introduced.
Some fucking random woman and her kid get thrown in at the last minute, so you have no emotional stakes. And I'm thinking, it's right, no editors looked at this and went, well, hang on, why wouldn't you just, it's very minor adjustment. Nope. Slapping you in the face, Stephen.
It's like, why?
I know when I'm writing a first draft, I will make those sort of... Well, it's not a mistake, but, you know, you do those sorts of things where you don't make the connections. Because you're generally working on it for a while. Then when you go through for a second draft, that's when you start to go, oh, yeah, I've got this character, and I have this role, and I've put someone else in here. No, Streamline. Yeah. Always streamline as much as you can. It's not like real life, where, real life is going to have a bunch of random people that you may never see again, you have no emotional investment in. That's what it's what it is to be a human being on planet Earth. In fiction, it is perfectly acceptable and even preferable if everything is connected. Yeah. There is something so satisfying to the human brain. We love... patterns, we love system, we love to imagine that there's a reason behind everything. So you got to play into the human psychology.
Setup, payoff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's fundamentals of storytelling. It's also when, like, for example, one thing with telling a tale, you don't want to keep introducing new characters, especially when you've got roles to fill. So, you set up, in this case, you set up mother and child. Mm. That's the role they play in the story.
Yeah.
You set up up as characters, you name them, you give them a personality. Half an hour later, I'll go in movie terms, so I have no idea how it happens in the book, but half an hour later, when you're setting up mother and child.
Yeah.
For an emotional payoff.
Yep.
Yeah.
He spends a good long while setting up that second mother and child. Like, he could just lost a whole chapter there. Oh my god.
Oh, yeah.
A good editor, a good studio executive, they need to be able to pull those extraneous strings together on the big dartboard. They're not dartboard, corkboard.
Producers should not be yes men to directors. Like, if there's something's not working, a producer should be the guy to say, no, this is not working, fix it.
Mm. I also want to mention that in the crowd here, we're getting some very Detroit Become Human kind of signs made by the protesters. Man was made in God's image. Robots are man-made. Okay, I mean, that. First of all, not very clear the way you've written that. And it's not catchy. Like, it's not really flowing. People need gerbs. Robots don't.
Dicker gerbs.
God hates robots, and it looks like there's a question mark at the bottom. God hates robots? Man, like, I don't want to make a huge statement here, but no apostrophe over gods, yeah.
Man was made in God's robots, images are man-made.
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to be read. Ah, makes more
It's this version's Don't Dead, the open inside.
Down the bottom it says that giant squid sushi forbidden in California. I would eat... Well, I mean, I'd eat any animal, let's be honest, but giant squid? Hell yeah. I know they're rare or giant whatever. Squid.
Okay, I will retract a criticism. This does say it's the Novak element, but have... What, was Samuel Jackson just going, no, you got me one day.
Greenpeace attacked by WikiLeaks. Oh, man, I want to see that fight. Brazilian something, we don't see the whole thing.
This is just some fucking boomer shit.
Yeah, I don't think... You keep saying those words, I don't think they mean what you think they do. why is it always these sorts of... So we cut to the lab. Just gotta say, like, from like a... I don't know if it's an occupational health and safety thing or just a human psychology, you know, workplace, mental health. Just no sunlight, no windows, nothing. You're just in this sterile white lab all day, every day.
I just go, whose idea was it to have just this locked-off shot of Gary Oldman?
Giant Gary Oldman.
Gigantic face. And it's... We find... The problem is, because we find out a bit later, this is RoboFlag's POV. But...
I don't get the logistics.
Human eyes don't work like that. Because you can see as you zoom out.
Well, he doesn't have human eyes, Simon. He's RoboCop. I know it's hard to remember because he's just Murphy in a rubber suit.
He must have a zoom function then, because, like, you can see literally in the shot where you've got them side by side, like Norton in the background, Flag in the screen left. Like, he's not literally in his face.
Yeah. I don't, and I just the don't cameras, like the
oh my
the
god,
composition.
The camera's tilting upwards to...
I see that they're trying to create depth and, you know, conveying the elements in an interesting way, but no, this is not Brian De Palma. This is not... It's not interesting. It's not working. It feels very flat, even though they're deliberately adding more dimension.
He's looking down at... From his point of view, he's looking down at Norton, but the camera angle on the screen is pointing up.
Yeah. It would be interesting if they tried, not that they would,
oh my God.
But trying to capture how it would look from a human eye. So to say, you know, very narrow width of focus, and it flits around all over the place, inconsistent, all of that would be quite interesting.
Yeah, but I'm poking the fun out of it because it's at least I'm getting some entertainment out of this.
So someone's got to derive some sort of enjoyment out of this. So that's all my notes.
I'm glad we're not on video because you'll just see me arms flailing about just fucking trying to not...
Yep.
Yeah, rage. Choking on my own rage here. This is why I kind of did want to, you know, go through these next 2 minutes because, the next minute... Oh, Jesus. The world's most stupidest decision. Oh, Jesus.
We'll get into it more next minute, then.
I'm all noted out.
All right, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. Wait, hang on. I've been recording so many of my...
Wrong podcast.
Yeah. I recorded three different... I did Tron, I did Blade Runner, and I did Covenant? Christine. Oh, no, I'd already done Covenant.
Oh, Christine.
But all in the same... Yeah, I've started Christine. And, yeah, I had to remember, hang on, okay, no, this is the one where I call people shitters, and this is the one where I say I'm signing off. Make sure you get those right. Also, end of line. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I could handle doing four separate podcasts.
I have a problem. And it's called...
Yeah.
Having Patreon listeners. No. It's called
having well, I don't have that problem.
Yeah.
hint.
Yes, please subscribe to us, like and subscribe on YouTube, then we can get monetized. Yeah.
Speaking of which, where can the lovely viewers find you?
Find me at traviandesigns.com. You can find me at Courtney Coulson on YouTube. Courtney and Ivy on Instagram. It's mostly just me in my car, all my outfits, op shop outfits mostly. And yeah, if you want to hear advanced episodes of Tron Legacy, Blade Runner 2049, and Christine, head on over to patreon.com/triviandesigns.
And you can find my crap at Fandom Crossing and Helios Photos, and yeah, I have the YouTubes and all that type of stuff, but it's been a while. I've been too damn busy. Technically still do Kunk Pow into the minutes, but yeah, again, the whole busyness and studying photography and making podcasts and still doing charity work. But more importantly, check us out on Simplecast, Spotify, Google, Apple, all your favorite podcasting, catching, or maybe releasing pod streaming. I'm getting into fishing metaphors here. It sounds like I'm fishing for views. But yeah, YouTube, just, yeah, like, share, subscribe, do all that algorithm bullshit, you know, yeah. I don't have anything, you know. You know the deal. You've been on the internet more than 5 minutes. Just do all the shit.
Yes.
And more importantly, until next time.
Robocock.
Nice, simple, to the point. Thank you.